is Santana Adams in partnership with the Kentucky Historical Society and the Kentucky Oral History Commission. Today we're located at 1517 East Irvine Street on April the 2nd, 2022. The time is now 5:32 p.m. I guess we can go ahead and proceed with the interview. Today I will be interviewing Taylor Stratman. So before we start, if there's anything that you don't want to talk about or any language that you prefer not be used while speaking on the topic, you can always just let me know. I prefer not to talk about this, or I prefer if we don't use this language. Push the... Okay. So, if you wouldn't mind to go ahead, restate your name and then give your age and your birthplace.
Okay. My name is Taylor Stratman. I am 23 years old, and I was born in Louisville, Kentucky.
All right. And then, if you wouldn't mind to tell us a little bit about the schools you've attended and your level of education.
So for grade school, I went to St. Athanasius Elementary, and that was in Louisville, so that was preschool through 8th grade. Then for high school, I went to Mercy Academy in Louisville, and I graduated in 2017. Then I got my social work degree at Eastern Kentucky University, May 2021, and now I am in grad school for social work there.
All right. And then could you tell me a little bit about your work history and your current occupation?
How long do you want me to go back?
Just what you feel is necessary. You can start with, like, your first job, and then, you know, you don't have to tell me every job, but just kind of...
Okay. So I started working pretty young, and I would say I'll start... When I got to college, I worked at the Center for the Arts, and I sold tickets for the concerts and stuff there in Richmond. And then I also eventually got hired on after another couple of jobs at the Student Success Center at EKU, and I was a guru there and did my social work practicum there. And then, let's see, what else happened? I got hired on as a graduate assistant at the Bratsky Center at EKU, and I work with student athletes, and I also work at Upward Bound at EKU, where I work with first gen low income high school students.
Awesome. So now we're going to get into a little bit more about the protest. So if you wouldn't mind disclosing what location you attended for the protest during that summer.
Richmond. It was right there on, like, Main Street.
Main Street. All right. And about, well, first, what days did you participate? Like, you can be general with it if you don't remember the exact day.
I think it was June 6th, because I think it was on Deb's birthday.
And Deb's your grandma, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Because I think I remember her going out for her birthday and being like, be careful, let me know when you get home.
All right. So, about what time would you estimate that you spent on the ground in that protest?
I would say, like, an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay. Did you help to organize the protest, or did you help organize the group to go? Did you go by yourself? What was the context of that?
I didn't help organize it, but Taylor and I went together, and we met up with a couple of our friends there.
And Taylor's your roommate, correct?
Yes.
Right. So how did you find out about the protest? Did social media or news play any part in your awareness of the protest happening that you attended?
I found it on maybe Facebook or Twitter, but I had been looking for one because of everything that was happening. So I did, like, I was actively searching, like, protests in Richmond, Kentucky, because I was like, someone has to be organizing something. So that's how we found it.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that has to, you looking for that has to do with the fact that you're from Louisville, maybe? Or, like, what was your reason for looking for that? Was it because it was popping up so often, or?
So we had, like, just moved into this house in the beginning of June 2020, and I remember in the context of that, just, me and my partner at the time and Taylor and literally everyone who I talked to, we were talking about what had happened with Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and just everything in the world at that moment. So I was looking for it because I had strong feelings about it, and I was like, I want to get involved in some way. And I thought that that would be the best way for me to actively participate in a cause like Black Lives Matter.
Definitely. Do you remember, like, the specific place that you might have seen the advertisement for the one in Berea, or just generally Twitter and Facebook?
It was the one in Richmond.
Or the one in Richmond, sorry.
No, it's okay. I think it was, like, a Facebook event.
Okay. All right.
Like, it was set up on, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was a Facebook event. I'm remembering that.
Well, no, you're good. No worries. It's been a while. It's 2022, and it happened in 2020. So we talked about this a little bit, but just to go more in depth, what made you decide that protesting was necessary? What were your personal reasons for participating?
So obviously it was amidst the pandemic, and I feel like it was like a time... It still is a time, I don't know when this time will end, where everything has become so painfully clear, or at least I feel that way, that things are very not okay in certain systems. Like, so for example, the LMPD, I think it especially struck a chord with me where I grew up in Louisville, and I know LMPD officers. They're parts of my friend's family, and but also I'm from Louisville, and I have friends that look like Breonna Taylor, and it struck a chord with me, and I felt that, you know, bitching about something on Twitter isn't gonna do anything about it, and if I don't have a lot of economic power or, like, power in general, then I can contribute to the numbers of people that are marching, like, peacefully here in Richmond and in a small town. Like, I think it was important in a small town like Richmond for the people of color in Richmond to see people show up for that.
And just a follow-up question real quick. Would you mind to clarify what the LMPD stands for?
Louisville Metro Police Department.
I saw that. I wanted to make sure we had that in there. So did you have any reservations or hesitations about participating in Richmond?
So obviously I had seen news of what was going on with Louisville, and the media portrayed it to be a really intense, scary thing. I was, like, of course, in the back of my mind, I was like, this could potentially be dangerous, but also I believe that I was meeting like-minded people, and I wasn't wanting to be violent, and when, so I was nervous about it, but when I read the energy when I got there, my nerves kind of dissipated, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it was also like the organizers had been in contact with the Richmond Police Department, so the roads were blocked off, and it was like very calm and well organized, and I think that led to like the feelings of like safety, if that makes sense. It was just the vibe there.
Definitely. So how had COVID-19 impacted the way you were living your life in terms of work, school, and social life? And then how might that have changed during or after the protest? So kind of what was going on with you when the pandemic started and all of this stuff was going on? What did your routine look like?
Okay, so I was working online at for the Student Success Center. I was a little guru, and I was, gosh, what else was I doing summer 2020? I was staying home most of the time, and then still, you know, wearing masks in public. I didn't go on vacation with my family that year like I normally do. My partner was working full-time outside of the house, so there was a lot of, like, being home, I did a lot of gardening and listened to a lot of podcasts and, just like normal. I don't know what is normal. It was just, I was a college student. I worked a college student-y job, and then I obviously read the news and stuff. So I think I definitely had more time on my hands to really delve into what was happening in Louisville, especially with my family being there and being like, what's happening, you know?
Definitely. And then how might that have changed after the protest? So you're talking about kind of how you more home-based jobs, you didn't go on vacation, so you were participating in the isolation of COVID-19. So how might that have changed after the protest?
So definitely, like, going into, like, my last year of college, I was working more in person, going to school in person, being around my peers more, being around just, like, people more.
So what made you feel like breaking public health protocols against larger public gatherings was needed in reference to the 2020 protests? Because this is the first big break we really saw in people coming out of the isolation.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just one of those, okay, so like, there was one thought that I had that I was like, it kind of felt like, everyone's lives were getting impacted by COVID, but the lives of people in color were getting impacted disproportionately by COVID, as well as being disproportionately impacted by police brutality. So it was like, I don't know, I guess people are dying either way, and like, that's awful, but kind of like utilitarian perspective to the whole thing, where I was like, I'm a college student, my job is at home, I don't hang out with people mostly, I wasn't seeing my family that summer. So I felt like, as a personal choice, it was something I was willing to do, and I knew that I wouldn't be putting a lot more people in danger. And it felt like something, like, COVID's something that started, I guess, at the end of 2019, but this stuff's been happening for a long, long time, and I don't think it was, like, fair to be like, well, we have to wait for COVID's over to express how we feel about all of this.
Yeah. So did you feel like you put yourself or others at risk because of COVID protocols being broken? Like, at the protest, how was the atmosphere different than it would have been had COVID not been around?
Well, there were some people wearing masks at the protest, and it was outside. There was definitely people, like, spaced out and aware of what COVID was, like, COVID social distancing stuff. maybe if COVID hadn't been involved, it would have been, like, bigger, or it could have just, like, been more, because there would have been more people willing to participate.
But the participants that were there, were following protocol?
Yeah.
Okay. So thinking back to specifically, so you'd given the date of, like, June the 6th. What were your thoughts at that moment, at that time, when the protests started? Like, what were your thoughts about the pandemic then? Because we know isolation or the lockdown had begun in late February, early March. So, like, what were your general thoughts around all of that on that day?
I was definitely nervous about it, but it was still just, I was hoping for a vaccine. I was wearing a mask at stores, and when I did go into work or into public places, I was wearing a mask, and I wasn't going out to eat, and I was trying to, like, be as careful as I could be. But also, I, like, did feel like I it was hard to know what was real. Like, there was so much information, especially being isolated. We're all getting our information from the internet and a bunch of different things. So it was like, I'm just going to be as safe as I know. I feel like is I know how to be. So
outside of that, what were your thoughts the day before the protest? If you remember your thoughts the day before that, or were you aware that you were going to the protest beforehand? If not, then the question we can...
I think it was like a couple days before that I was made aware, and I was definitely kind of nervous, but also excited, and I was like, I've never been to a protest before, and I was like, this is... I feel like I have to go because I want... If I ever have kids or, like, have to, like, look a young person in the face, I need to be able to say that, like, I did something, that I cared enough to do something, to show up somewhere, that I cared enough to show up.
Definitely. Let's see. What was the crowd like during the protest? What stuck out to you the most about the events of that day?
On the way there, there was an older black lady that was a retired school teacher. We walked from the car together to the place where we met up. It was, I think it was by the library. We came down Main Street to the courthouse. And we just had small talk, and she was like, are you all in school? What are you doing? And she was like, I was a teacher. And just like, but it was interesting, like, the generational difference and the way she, like, smiled and was welcoming. And everyone there, it was very, like, I saw some of my friends there, and everyone was just genuinely kind of excited to be there. It was a really positive energy.
Mm-hmm. So was there any training on how to protest nonviolently or safely before you'd went, like?
So, oh yeah, do you need to
no,
okay,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
In the advertisement, it was like, peaceful protest, we have talked with the city and stuff so that they know that we're protesting, so there wouldn't be any, like, violations of, like, traffic laws or, like, the road was blocked off for us to do it. I think that made it go a lot smoother, like, the organization of it, of being like, we have our area, this is where we're going, this is the plan. And then when we marched to the courthouse, someone came and spoke. I think the mayor did, and an individual that was maybe involved with the organization did afterwards. I'm getting off track. It was very, from the beginning, from everything you read about the event, it was understood that it was to be peaceful and it was protesting. And then I think the people who organized it, or I don't even know, there were people leading chants, and we just kind of followed along with the chants, and it was like, say her name, like the normal ones you had heard from BLM marches across the country. So, and we just marched peacefully down the street.
So it was known that it was going to be a peaceful protest.
Mm-hmm.
Were you seeing anything about nonviolent or safety training on social media? Because we know social media plays such a large part in the organization of these protests. Did you... you see anything that you were supposed to do or not supposed to do through media outlets?
I feel like I definitely did, like, through TikTok, had seen, and it was more to do with, like, what to do if you were in a violent protest, safety protocols, like, what to have on you, what to do if you were pepper sprayed, and that's not, yeah, so I saw that, but then that wasn't, like, my life, I didn't need that at the Richmond protest.
So you've talked about how the atmosphere was really good for Richmond. There was a lot of control over everything. But did you face or did you see anyone face any threats of violence or intimidation by anti-protesters or people who were there who didn't support what was going on, if there were any?
So I did not personally experience this in Richmond. But as I said, like, before, I'm from Louisville, and I'm friends with a lot of people I grew up with in Louisville on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. And there were multiple of my friends who I know their character, and they were peacefully protesting that were attacked by the police and shot with rubber bullets. And she just, like, she posted pictures of it, and she had bruises all up and down her thighs. And I just, she said that, like, she was behind the picket lines that they had set and everything. And I kept seeing things like that happening in Louisville through my Facebook feed, through people that I knew. And then the media was portraying it as if, like, they were being the violent ones. So that was really interesting.
For the purposes of this interview, I've asked that Taylor does not use any names of friends. That is why you may hear pronouns being used in place of names. That is to protect the safety of any individuals who were harassed or subjugated to police violence. Okay, so what was your call to action, not just to deem this necessary, but to make you get involved? Like, do you remember a pivotal moment where you were like, now's the time, or this is why I need to get involved?
That's a really good question. I think that it was that I didn't have a pivotal moment as much as I could not stop thinking about it, and I could not stop talking about it, and I could not stop when I watched, like, the footage, any of the footage from Louisville. Like, that was my hometown, and it was, I just had, like, I just felt like I grew up, obviously, in a place where I benefited from white privilege while being protected by Louisville Metro Police Department officers, when people who are the very same as me but didn't have the same color of my skin did not have that. And that just, it really, it shocked me. I'm ashamed to admit how much it shocked me, and it made me feel gross. And I was like, I have to do something about this, because I felt like I benefited off the system that killed Breonna Taylor, and I was like, I cannot, that's not, I have to balance this back out.
Yeah. So, Breonna Taylor, how do you understand and value Breonna Taylor's life and death? What about her death was uniquely motivating? In what way were there other people's lives and deaths that were also meaningful to you? So this is kind of a big chunky question, so we can kind of just start with that first part of how did you understand and value her life and death?
So what I understood was that she went to a local high school that some of my friends went to, and she was an EMT for a time and even won an award, and she was so obviously if she was doing that, she was in service to her community. And also, nonetheless, she was a human being who was murdered, who was innocent, who was murdered by police officers in a place where she should be safe and the police officers should have been protecting, like, her. Like, that, she was unjustly killed.
So before we move on to the uniquely motivating question, I just want to ask, and this is something I've done in past interviews, can you tell me what you remember happened with her death? Like, how it occurred? Like, how did that story get to you, and what did it look like?
It looked so many different ways for so many different people. Because there were people that were, like, accusing her of selling drugs, or accusing her, like, boyfriend of doing things. And honestly, like, I don't remember clearly the intricacies of the case, but I do remember with every new detail I learned and verified that I was still feeling that she was definitely murdered in a way like she shouldn't. I remember the fact that she was murdered, I believe, by a bullet that went through a wall, And that really stood out to me because, like, they weren't even looking. They were just free shooting into an apartment. Like, that, yeah, okay, I think that was right. That what really set me off about it. That seemed very, like, violent and reckless. Or at least that was, like, the reporting that I heard on it.
Do you have any recollection of what state her and her boyfriend were in upon entry to the apartment? Do you know if they were standing, what the position was in the apartment? And it's okay if you don't know, but...
Was she, like, in her room?
Is that how you remember it happening?
I remember it, yeah. I remember... What I remember is feeling like, wow, she was just, like, in her house, not doing... Like, we're sitting in my house right now. Like, mm-hmm. Just chilling. Like, that's terrible.
I don't feel terrible about your perspective and the way you remember it happening, which is important to this study.
Yeah.
So, how is all of this so uniquely motivating to you?
Like I said before, just, like, the, like, growing up with LMPD officers and knowing them and their families, and then also just knowing people of color in Louisville, and it was kind of like a cognitive dissonance moment, thinking about some of my positive interactions with police officers, but then having to recognize that there's people in those same uniforms that did that, and so you're really like, how do you put that together? And in the end, I was like, I have to do, like, there's an injustice here in my hometown, and it's everywhere else, but it's being, like, there's a microscope on my, like, town right now, so I felt, I just uniquely motivated. I just felt it in my little heart.
So, were there other people's lives or deaths that were also meaningful to you, or other lives or deaths that you had heard about, things happening in the same kind of way? Like, I know you mentioned George Floyd.
Well, also, even back to years prior, I think his name is Michael Brown, Ferguson, Tamir Rice, Sandra Bland? There was a Sandra that she had gotten arrested for being pulled over and, like, allegedly killed herself in prison, but, like, there were other stories I had seen in the media. I would say even throughout the years of police violence, and it was just like, are you serious right now? Mm-hmm. It was like it hit a boiling point.
So, along with protesting, were you directly in any way involved in the BLM as in the organization, or were you affiliated or working with other organizations during this time?
I wasn't affiliated with any organizations with BLM at this time. I obviously kept up with the news and the movement and tried to find their social medias and support in their causes. So in that time I was trying to, like, I retweeted a lot of, like, things about Black creators and did any positive thing I could do on social media for that, but I wasn't, like, actively affiliated with any organization.
All right. So... From your understanding, you're not affiliated with BLM, as you just stated. How did you perceive BLM goals?
I perceived BLM goals as something that was just Black Lives Matter. Okay, so just, like, in the sentence, in the statement, it was just, like, it struck me because of, like, it sounds stupid, almost, not stupid, but of course their lives matter, and it's important to say Black Lives Matter because we're not very considerate of Black lives, and as far as their goals, I think that they were working toward equality so that this community could stop having certain barriers that we have put there. It was the removal of barriers so we could all be on a level playing field. And I think that that's really important. And I always view the Black Lives Matter movement as just something that was positive and leaning towards equality and for, like, people of color in America to live happier, healthier lives.
The next I want to ask you about two phrases that were commonly heard around the times of the protest as well as in relation to BLM, and I just want you to tell me your thoughts on them, if you wouldn't mind. And those two phrases are, first, Blue Lives Matter, and then second, defund the police. How do you feel or perceive
that? There is no such thing as a blue life. Dude, okay, so the way I feel about that is when a police officer goes home, he gets to take off his uniform and not be a police officer anymore, but a person of color doesn't get to shed that identity. So I think that, like, I mean, of course I don't think that, like, police lives don't matter, but also I feel like they're not the ones burdened by systemic oppression of, like, the Black people face, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And then
the defund the police. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I remembered that one.
Oh, you're good, no worries.
I think that's, like, a gray area topic, because part of me is like, yeah, absolutely defund the police, because they're not doing what they should be doing. But I would, before I would... Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that one, if that makes sense.
Mixed feelings in what way? Do you feel like defunding the police is maybe not the right answer to the issue, or it's a potential answer, but you don't know how it works, or...
Oh, yeah, like, I don't know how it works, and I think that, like, the general mission of what the police are supposed to do, in my understanding, is, like, keeping people safe, and obviously they're not doing that, so they're not doing what they were meant to be doing if people are facing police brutality. So I think if defunding the police looks like restructuring the way that, like, the safety nets in America work, and we still value everyone's lives and things be restructured, yes. I'm not even saying that, like, I don't know, what would the world look like without police officers? I don't know. So that's what I don't have any, I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other with defunding the police, but I'm, like, open-minded and curious about it. But I definitely don't think the police should continue as normal as well.
If you don't mind me asking, what do you think a potential fix or a different avenue to handling this situation looks like?
I don't know. Like, I don't think that... It just seems like police officers are just, like, in this, like... Even in their training, they're ingrained to be in defense and attack mode. And I think there needs to be a real come-to-Jesus moment with police officers and what their role is, because it just seems like there's so many narcissistic people that get into that line of work and benefit off the power, and if, like, that power is too much for an individual to, like, be able to handle, then maybe we shouldn't give the police as much power. Maybe they shouldn't have the weapons they have. Maybe they shouldn't, maybe, I think especially in cases of, like, someone being suicidal or disputes like that, that police officers shouldn't come in guns a-blazing. I feel like I've heard a lot of stories of, like, asking for a wellness check, it ended up, like, them ending in the police officer shooting the person that they were supposed to be doing a wellness check on because they were armed. And I think that it would have to look a lot like power redistribution. That's what I'm saying.
So this is something that I've heard previous interviewees speak on the topic, is how do you feel about training that police undergo, and how do you feel like we could improve that training?
I think that the training is, one common thing that I feel like I've heard a lot is, like, they're told to, like, unload their clip. Why? Why do they have to shoot all of the bullets out of their gun? And I think that they need to be trained more in de-escalation. And it's, like, I feel like, also, shouldn't police officers have, like, a criminal justice degree or, like, a bachelor's degree in something or know something about the law before enforcing it? Because that's one thing. I'm like, most police officers, what laws do they actually know? Like, how can you enforce the law if you don't know the law? You're just enforcing what you think is the law. And that leaves a lot of room for, like, error, obviously.
Definitely. As a social worker, I know you talked about that being a part of your background. Do you feel like there's anything that's applicable from that could help with police training?
Oh, absolutely. It's like de-escalation or just like understanding the psychology or like what's processing in people's brains in traumatizing situations. And I don't know, maybe approaching police work with, like, a pinch of empathy or something. And, like, I think that also knowing the laws and knowing that certain groups of people face certain systemic issues. And, like, police officers should be well-trained in how police brutality impacts Black people, because they're supposed to be protecting all of us. So, like, why shouldn't they have to look that right on the, they have to write that on the whiteboard? Like, they should be knowing about it.
Definitely. So, how did participating in the protest of 2020 impact the relationship with your friends or your family or your community? Did you face any
I didn't face any issues. If anything, it made me feel like I was doing more to support my friends back home. It definitely made my grandparents and mom a little nervous, but they also were understanding of it, and they were like, just be careful. I understand why you're doing what you're doing, and I never received any kind of negative impact from being involved in those things.
Did you face any backlash on social media when you were posting about BLM or supporting Black creators? Was there anything along those lines where you met any friction?
No, I might have lost a couple followers, but I didn't notice if I did. And I think I got hired on, my supervisor for the first time was a Black woman starting that following, like, the next year. And I still had Black Lives Matter in my bio on Twitter, and she went to follow me, and she was very proud of me for it. She was like, good for you, Taylor, and I was like, hell yeah. So if anything, being associated with BLM has been positive for me, and I guess that could be white privilege as well.
So thinking back to media, was the media accurate, in your opinion, of their detailing of the events and attitudes protesters around the protests?
This is really interesting because I, like, know, like, local news media in Louisville, and that was pretty accurate, where they tried to remain at least non-biased, but when it came to, like, the big media outlets, Fox News had it way wrong. Just from what I could see with my own eyes and hear from my parents who are living in Louisville, and I mean, like, their cars never got jacked and houses never got broken into, and I mean, there were stores that were closed up, but also, like, it seemed to be like the violent pieces seemed to be exacerbated on the part of the protesters when you watch Fox News. And it seems like it was definitely getting skewed the broader the reach was.
Definitely. And you'd referenced that your parents' property in Louisville hadn't been damaged. Would you mind giving a general region in Louisville that they live in, like which district?
Yeah, so my dad lives, like, south side right across from, like, the Iroquois Park area. which is an area that is very diverse racially. And then my mom lives in Okolona, which is a working class area. So they didn't live downtown, but also the issues of the protests never really reached them.
From what I know, your mom's a school teacher. Did you remember her bringing anything up about her in relation to her work having any issues around the times of the protests?
So it was like summer when the protests were happening, so they weren't in school. My mom comes from, she works at a really racially diverse school, and she was very like, her and her teachers were all very like concerned about how their students were doing over the summer and how it was affecting them and all of that stuff.
So what would you say the difference was between big news outlets and your firsthand experiences here in Richmond?
I feel like obviously big news outlets have to dramatize stories to get more clicks and to get more likes, so they want to really make a headline catchy, and that goes both ways. And what I saw was that the LMPD handled things awfully, god awfully, when it came to the protest, and a lot of people were hurt, and it was not safe. I think people were killed, and it was, in my opinion, the way the city handled it was pitiful, and they should have been they should have made more room or communication with the protesters. I think that it wasn't the protesters' fault that the city was unwilling to work with them.
And would you say that was different for Richmond, that the city was more willing to work with the protesters than San Mobile?
It seems that way. It does seem that way. Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of fear-based leadership going on there at the time.
But not in Richmond.
Mm-mm. And I know Richmond at the time at least had a black mayor. So it was just, I don't know, we were given the room to do something, and I don't think that the people in Louisville were necessarily given the same respect or, like, treated with respect or, like, human beings.
So what did you want to see as an outcome from the protest in Richmond?
I definitely wanted to see all of the police officers involved in Breonna Taylor's death go to jail, but didn't get that, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just to see reform in the criminal justice system, in the justice system, just, we need reform everywhere. So there was that, the want for reform, and also I felt like it was just important to show up for people in Richmond of color or anyone of color. It was just important for me as a person of privilege to show up, to say, I see you, I hear you, and what you feel is important and valid, and I care about it.
Do you feel like that happened? Do you feel like you could say that people of color in Richmond feel more supported now?
I don't know, because I'm not a person of color, so, like, I guess I can't know. I hope they do. I hope that seeing that people, a large group of people actually showed up, made them feel like they had more allies here. But I don't know. I hope so.
Mm-hmm. So have your feelings about the protests and the goals of the movement changed since the summer of 2020, seeing as we're now in 2022?
I wouldn't say they've really changed. I still think that I still want police reform. I still want criminal justice reform. I still think that we, as a country, need to be doing more for our people of color. And I still would go to another BLM march. If there was another one in Richmond, I would go.
Definitely. And this is a question I've asked in a couple of the previous interviews. So something happened and has been put into place in a couple of different states as well as cities, and it's called Breonna's Law. It is the no-knock warrant law. What do you know about that?
Did it say that there's no such, outlaw no-knock warrants, or it prevented them from happening again?
Essentially, it made it illegal for police, for the people who passed it, it made it illegal for police to enter a premises without knocking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I remember that now. And I think that that's important, because in her case, that was a no-knock situation. And if anyone busts into my house and doesn't knock, and I have, like, a weapon for safety, then I might draw it on them. So that seems like it's a good law for safety reasons to not be allowed to burst into someone's home in that way, because that's dangerous for everyone involved.
Definitely. So do you have any thoughts or topics or anything that you want to say or add that you haven't been asked about in this interview, or anything that you want to continue on before we come to a close?
Not that I can think of.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me interview you.
You're welcome.